WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Greetings, I'm Maimuna Youssef, and this is WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
To turn it around.
DC. This is Joni with Chuck Hicks, and we're going to wish Chuck Hicks happy birthday in a moment, but I just wanted to say some of you longtime listeners might be able to guess who is our guest for the hour just by the song that we just heard. We are honored and thankful to have none other than Tom Porter joining us for the hour. Many of us consider Tom to be the godfather of WPFW. He certainly is that for me and many others. And as we know, there's a lot going on in our city, in our region, in our country, and in the world. And I can think of no one better to discuss than Tom Porter. I'm just going to give a little introduction to him for those of you who many of you, not all of you, know that he used to be the program director of WPFW back in the 90s. And many of us, including me, are on the air only because of Tom. And that includes people like James Funk, Captain Fly, and a lot more. I think that Brother Jamil also is in part on the air because of Tom Porter. And he was and certainly is a huge inspiration to me. I would not have been on WPFW wasn't for Tom Porter. But let me give you a little additional background about Tom that you often don't hear. He is a political analyst, has been an administrator, has held administrative and teaching positions at Ohio University, Antioch, Howard University, Federal City College, now known as UDC. He was the dean of African American Studies at Ohio University and the executive director of the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Social Change in Atlanta, Georgia. He was also the director of Antioch's Graduate School of Education here in DC. And he speaks often on social and public policy issues in many venues. Again, he is the godfather of WPFW, and we are very honored to have him here with us. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Julie. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm great to have. I feel a lot better having you on. Again, Tom is an inspiration to many of us. And for those of you who may not know, is very close to Askia Muhammad, whose anniversary when Askia passed was just last Monday, February 17th, 2022. Before we jump in with Tom, I want to wish Chuck Hicks, tomorrow is his 80th birthday. We had a wonderful celebration with Chuck on Saturday. We are going to be spending next Monday really talking about Chuck's important history and his family's history. So happy birthday, Chuck. Okay, Tom, let's jump right into our discussion. Where we are, reflections on today, which, of course, covers a lot. So however you'd like to start us off.
Well, you know, Joni, back in the day, William Burroughs had a book called The Naked Lunch. And the naked lunch is where we see what is on the end of every fork. And so what we're seeing today, it's out in the open. It's been hidden, pretending not to exist. But what we're seeing is an impulse that was a part of the founding of this so-called democracy, founded on slavery, genocide of the Native Americans, taking the land away from the Mexicans, and using the poor as fodder and as a wedge against the uniting of people who shared more in common than they did not share in common. And so now it's out in the open, and it's important to understand what Lenin meant when he said that disunity under the guise of unity, under the guise of making America great again, and under the guise of cutting waste and spending, what we're really seeing is a power grab and theft of money. And what they're doing is balancing or reducing the debt at the expense of the people who can least afford to suffer. So that's what's happening. As Marcus Garvey said, the whole world is run on a bluff. Don't let the bluffer bluff you. And we got a bluff artist in the White House. Fortunately, that many people around the world in Africa and Asia and Latin America are calling his bluff.
So they sure are.
That's where we are.
Absolutely.
But my good friend Bob Law would say, and therefore, having laid all of that out, therefore, what are we to do? Mm-hmm. What is to be done? It's another book by a great revolutionary, which you should check out. What is to be done? What is to be done is, particularly in terms of the Black community, and there's a strong racial component in this situation. You fire the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who happens to be Black, the first person you kicked off the board at the Kennedy Center was Jonathan Baptiste. You want to take over the District of Columbia, which is largely a Black city. And the reason why D.C. didn't get home rule, because it was a Black city. So when they got it, it was a throwaway. And now he's threatening to take that away. And the reason why this racial component is there, as well as the border, is to satisfy the racist impulse of people who have been deluded by this clown in the White House that their problems will be solved if we get rid of all of the immigrants who are here illegal, and if we get rid of the Blacks and people of color who have government jobs under the guise of eliminating DEI. So the question is, what should be done? First of all, people should resist. Workers should refuse to leave their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I once worked for the Urban League, and I testified in city council about what the Urban League's records files would reveal about the big companies in Cincinnati who pledged to give jobs to Black people. And the people on the board, the white members of the board, told Mr. Hall, the head of the Urban League, that he should fire me. And I told Mr. Hall that I was not in a position to be fired, that I had a wife and children. And at that time, I was much more militant than I am now. He knew that I might not be able to get at the members of the board, but I could get at him, or we could get at him. And so that's the first thing the workers should do. It would be better if they were seen being dragged out of their buildings by cops and bullies into the streets so people could see it, rather than to meekly think that, in fact, they're going to get something, as you can see from the courts. I mean, even a judge who was appointed by Baraka, a Black person, refused to allow what the labor leaders had put before him. Now, he probably had a legal ground, but to stand on a legal ground when you see that legality has gone out the window. As a matter of fact, the Project 2025 people are saying that we're in a post-constitutional era, post-constitutional period, which means that the Constitution doesn't mean anything. And so if you think you got something coming from the courts, you can forget that. And so I would say to the people in my community, in the Black community, it's time to build resistance at every level. If your preacher on Sunday is not talking about resistance, if your preacher is not talking about Saturday and Sunday schools to educate Black kids, if your preacher's not talking about that, leave his church. You haven't heard anything from the Black caucus, and there's a good reason. AIPAC gave them $12 million. To not say anything about what's happening to the Palestinians, but to not say anything about the fact that AIPAC had targeted, I think, six Democrats, one white, four of them were Black women, one was a Black man. They defeated the Black man in New York and a woman in St. Louis, and the other Black caucus said nothing. And so we don't have any leadership. Therefore, what we're seeing with Trump is that it looks as if we're leaderless. There's a Black caucus, but we don't have any leaders. And so we're going to have to, and new leadership will come. It will come from the people, not to the people. It will come from the people. But we've got to resist at all levels. I mean, people are talking about boycotts. That's very, very important. We have to internationalize our movement. We have to take our movement to another level. We cannot allow what happened to the reparations movement to be reduced to a city in Illinois or perhaps a county in New York City. We have to take it to another level. The issue of reparations is international. It should be before the International Criminal Court, the World Court, and it should be before the UN, but it should not be before the US Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
We have to join the rest of the world. We should be seeking at least a what do I want to call it? We should be at least to be able to sit in on BRIC meetings. We should be a part of the emerging unity of African states. We have to internationalize our struggle. And the most important thing is we have to have what happened in the case of George Floyd. The world had an oh hell no moment. Oh hell no moment. It's time to have another oh hell no moment. You just gone too far.
Well, I certainly agree with everything you say. The only addition I would make, going back to the federal workers, I've been going to a lot of the rallies and meetings of a kind of a new group called the Federal Unionist Network, which combines several of all the unions that represent federal workers. And they're saying exactly what you said. And I've heard many of the workers say they're going to have to be dragged out of their jobs. And they're being advised by the union and even their supervisors not to quit. So I think that movement is getting stronger. But let me just follow up on what you were saying. Share a little more about what can be done to really make that happen, to internationalize the struggle.
I mean, the answer is easy. The problem is our leadership has been bought. There are no more John Conyers in the Black Caucus or Charlie Diggs or Adam Clayton Powell. Mm-hmm. We don't even have leadership at the local level. And that's across the country. But leadership emerges out of struggle. I mean, I learned leadership in the civil rights movement by moving up the ladder in terms of leadership. But we have to first recognize, the first thing is we have to first recognize that it is a goal, that we got nothing coming. Black people got nothing coming in America. Nothing at all. And it's very, very clear that we don't have anything coming in America. And so for those people who say we might have to save America, no, we have to save ourselves. Now, we can work in relationship with other people as we did in the 60s with Latinos, with Asians, with people in Appalachia. But when you have a situation like you have in America, where from the Supreme Court to the Congress to the Senate to the local judges to the state representatives, what have you, are bought and paid for, you're wasting your time to appeal to them, which has been one of the pitfalls of our movement. And that is we spent too much time trying to convince the people in this society, namely white people, that we were worthy of being a part of this society, even though Dr. King and Malcolm and James Baldwin warned us about the prospect of being integrated into a burning house. And the house is on fire now. In order to take it to the next level, and there are already people who have relationships with the UN, but they don't really represent the broadness that we need at that level. But we have to begin by having relationships with the UN, by being, I can't think of the term that comes to mind, when you are able to sit in and participate. They say it brings the Belt and Road Initiative, but we have to see ourselves as a people connected with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard people saying, well, I even heard some musicians say, who I respected, when asked to say something about the issue in the Middle East, they said things like, well, the Palestinians don't come to hear me. The Jews hire me. And I don't want to really call their names, but they should be ashamed of themselves, even though they're my friends.
Tom, tell people who don't know, that I'm sure there are many, what BRICS is.
I couldn't hear you.
Tell listeners who may not know what BRICS is.
BRICS is a organization which stands for, let me get it together. South Africa, China, Russia. I'm trying to get to B. Well, it's an organization which was formed and initiated by China. Oh, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Mm-hmm. And just recently, they brought 11 countries in as associate members, and which included Uganda, Nigeria, Cuba, Vietnam, and a couple of other countries. And they represent well over 40% of the world's people. And a significant economic bloc. Mm-hmm. So we should be a part of that. But we have to see ourselves as people who ain't got nothing coming. As Ruby Dee said in Buckingham Preacher, they ain't gonna give us nothing. It's just it's like a poison soaked in the ground. And we have to come to that conclusion. And I'm not the first person to say this. William Patterson, in his book, We Charge Genocide, mm-hmm. which was written in the 40s, I believe.
Yes, the late 40s. Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm X talked about taking our struggle to the UN. Dr. King always internationalized our struggle. In fact, Dr. King said that Black Americans would never be free until a long night of imperialism is lifted from Asia, Africa, and Latin America, which was the essence of why there was a Bandung conference of people of color of the world. So these ideas are not new, but what is new is that this present generation that we're dealing with in terms of leadership, including the mayor of Washington, D.C., separated itself from the history of struggle and the history of our people. And so you don't hear them talk about Dr. King or Malcolm. I asked a young man at the Y the other day, if he ever listened to Malcolm X, he said, that was back then, now is now. Mm. He didn't tell me what now was. And even the YMCA, which is named after a Black man who started the first Black Y, because he couldn't get in the white Y, the Anthony Bowen Y, they don't close on Martin Luther King's birthday, which is a federal holiday, but they celebrate 30 days of gay pride.
Hmm.
Now, I believe in reciprocity, and I will say this to anybody who wants me to support whatever their issues are. I want to know where you stand on my issues. And so when you don't demand that they be closed on Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, but you want 30 days, oh, no, I'm not with that. And I think that's a mistake that our leadership has made, is that they've entered into relationships with groups who in many cases are part of the suffering of Black people, gentrification, for instance. So There are a lot of things, but now we have to be concerned about ourselves. And that's why I say we have to internationalize our struggle. We have to take it to another level because the world is going to another level. The stuff that Donald Trump is talking about is passe. He's going down in the polls. His own people are getting upset with him because while he and Elon Musk are basically figuring out how they can steal money and grab power, the very people who voted for him are suffering. And they're surprised because they thought that it was going to be Black people and Latinos and gay people and lesbian and trans or whatever. But they didn't think it would be them, even though they were suffering all over. If you go through Appalachia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and what have you, you can see the poverty among the MAGA constituency, who would rather hate than eat.
Tom, in a moment, we're going to hear some words from Ella Baker. But if you could just start to share with us, what would be some of your first recommended steps to internationalize a movement as Malcolm has done? And then later, I'll also ask you about home rule. But what do you see as the first steps in that direction?
Well, as I said, the first step is to recognize that we need to do it. The second step is the issue that we have is who is to do it? Who is to do it? I mean, when we look at leadership in the Black community, I don't know anybody. The Black caucus is certainly not going to take it to that level. They're not even going to raise the issue, not the Urban League, not the NAACP. So it has to come from the people. And I mean, there's some things that I'm thinking about and pulling some people together. I don't particularly want to talk about it on the program. You know, if you throw something out there, the reactionaries, as they did with the reparations movement, they took it and reduced it to some city, that's, as I said earlier, and someplace in New York where they agreed to give Black people something. And of course, we're so used to living on soft money until we go for soft money. So, but that's over with. That's over with. So that, and I'm not the only one that's thinking about this, and some other people may act upon it, but I've heard Dr. Gerald Horn talk about it. I've heard Wilmer Leon talk about it, but now is the time to figure out how to do it. And I don't think that I'm the only one that's speaking on these issues. And I know that there are people who are doing things and planning things because that's, I mean, as they say, every shut eye ain't sleep. And so there are people who are planning things, who are planning resisting, who are planning to fight, who are planning to boycott. Some people are even leaving. I'm surprised at the people who are leaving, not just Black people. We tend to think there certainly is a lot of Black people who are beginning to see Africa as an alternative, to see Panama as an alternative, a lot of places, even Portugal. But I have a friend who's a world-class astronomer, and he's talking about leaving. So he's not being oppressed, but he doesn't like what he sees and feels in America.
You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is To Heal DC with me, Joni. And Chuck Hicks is with us, too. I'm going to ask Chuck, after we listen to this clip, if you want to make a comment, Chuck, or have a question, please do. And again, we're thankful to have on the air with us for the hour Tom Porter, who many of us know as the godfather of WPFW, but he's much, 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 much more as well, as we shared in the beginning. So, Tom, let's hear this, unless you want to say something about Ella Baker, and then we'll go to the clip.
Well, only to say that people who don't know who Ella Baker was, she was one of the founders of the Southern Youth Congress, which predated SNCC, and she was one of the founders of SNCC. But even more than that, she was a revolutionary Black woman before that was fashionable, before we honored women as such. And she was a leader and a confidant of Dr. King and Jack O'Dell and other people who I respected. And I think that when you hear this clip, she says it much better than I can say it.
But your spirit says it as well. Okay, Mikey, let's hear it.
Friends, brothers, and sisters in the struggle for human dignity and freedom, I am here to represent the struggle that has gone on for 300 or more years, a struggle to be recognized as citizens in a country in which we were born. I have had about 40 or 50 years of struggle, ever since a little boy on the streets of Norfolk called me a nigger. I struck him back, and then I had to learn. I had to learn that hitting back with my fist one individual was not enough. It takes organization. It takes dedication. It takes the willingness to stand by and do what has to be done when it has to be done. A nice gathering like today is not enough. You have to go back and reach out to your neighbors who don't speak to you. And you have to reach out to your friends who think they are making it good and get them to understand that they, as well as you and I, cannot be free in America or anywhere else where there is capitalism and imperialism until we can get people to recognize that they themselves have to make the struggle and have to make the fight for freedom every day in the year, every year, until they win it. Thank you.
And that certainly couldn't be more true today. Chuck, if you want to jump in now or have any comment, welcome.
Thank you. I think what's important, and our guest alluded to, was that people oftentimes think because it's the fellow workers who are being fired, well, that's not me. That's not my cup of tea. But when the rooster starts to peck, he pecks all over. And all those people who was happy that all this was going to happen as a downfall to this, that you're right in that wave, whether you know it or not. And don't wait till you're being drowned before you start to help me. Now is the time to stand up. Now is the time. Not later, but now. Now is the time. It's not just the federal workers. It's all of us. Those of who are retired, those of us who have private industry, those who work in community centers, this affects all of us.
Absolutely. And as was said back in World War II, if they came for the first group, let's say the right. Jews or whoever, you didn't stand up. But then there was nobody left when they came right. for you. So that's still very true. And again, we want to wish Chuck a happy birthday. Next Monday, we're going to be spending much of the hour talking about Chuck's revolutionary history, not only with what he's done, but his father, who, as we've often said, was one of the founders of the Deacons for Defense in Bogalusa, Louisiana. So we'll be hearing more of Chuck's stories next week, but we wish him happy birthday for tomorrow. So let's jump back with our esteemed and wonderful guest, Tom Porter. Tom, anything more you'd like to say about what Ella Baker had to say, or you know, where we stand? How can we, if, for example, in right here in Washington D.C. and what's being proposed, of course, like so many of these other measures, is horrifying bills to make the D.C. City Council do away with the D.C. City Council. The president would be in charge of the police, and more. So more and more frightening, horrific things. But Tom, what, again, talk to us more about organizing and maybe lessons from past.
It's interesting that we should have to talk about organizing, which suggests that we stopped organizing. You know, there was a period in the history of this country, namely the period of the Vietnam War, when the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement and the various movements came together. This society was very clear that it did not want another generation similar to that generation. They didn't want another Martin Luther King or Bobby Dylan or Jane Fonda or Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture. They did not want that. And they set about the business of negating that whole period of history if they could. And they did it at a lot of different levels, even at the cultural level. There was a point at which rap and hip hop was revolutionary music coming out of the desire of young Black people, mostly in New York, to address oppressive issues in their community. They switched it from the East to the West, not just to the West Coast, but they switched it to gangster rap, and the leading gangster rappers now play cops on TV. They did the same thing with reggae music, which is very popular. They switched from roots rock reggae to dancehall, which was more about sex and other activities than it was about the message that Bob Marley and Bonnie Wailer and Peter Tosh and a whole group of people were pushing. But they also did that with leadership. They made sure that those who got funded to become congressmen and what have you were their chosen ones, and the ones who were not chosen couldn't get any money. And so the responsibility, and when you study the science, and I studied what we call the science of societies, there are the fundamental laws of the science of society: the law of unity and dignity, identity and struggle, the law of the negation and the negation, and the law of opposites. The law of the negation is based on the mathematical principle that a minus and a plus equals a minus, but two minuses is an affirmation of something. The sense of it is, they tried to negate the image of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Kwame Ture and Jim Brown, at least their activities. And the responsibility, and Obama was part of the negation. He was not a part of the negation, which is to affirm something at a higher level, affirm what Dr. King and Malcolm were talking about in his time. He was brought into play to blunt the movement represented by Jesse Jackson, who was number three when he ran for president in 1984. Mm-hmm. And they set about the business of destroying Jesse and hiring all the people who were around Jesse. Bill Clinton did this. And because Jesse had shown in the context of his time that it was possible not only for a Black man, but also for another agenda to reach a higher level. And so they set about the business of making sure that that didn't happen. And they did the same thing with Bernie Sanders when that Negro John Clyburn got those Negroes in South Carolina to bring a cat who was number four into a number one position when Bernie Sanders was number one, proving that another agenda was possible. So while Bernie was negating the negation, Clyburn was trying to negate Bernie. And so that's been the history. That is why I said that we must separate ourselves from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and hopefully other people will join us. But we as African Americans, and I'm being very, very specific about this, we need to arm ourselves physically, mentally, and spiritually, because it's going to be a fight. Because when somebody measures you and say, well, you're weak, your leadership is weak, and you notice that as you interact with some whites when you're in a supermarket, what have you, who want to confront you, not get out of the way, the N-word. I had a guy call me the N-word in front of Whole Foods, and I was not driving my car, but another car, and I opened the trunk because I was getting ready to get my tire iron and give him a good whipping, but I was in the wrong car. So I told a black cop when I got into Whole Foods what had happened. He said if I had hit him, they would have to take me to jail because he was exercising his legitimate freedom of speech. So that's what time it is.
Yes.
And and it is time for all hands on deck. It is no time, as we say in my hometown, for nut rolling. There's no time for half-stepping. And I would say that to anybody who's listening, we have to resist this. You cannot make a deal with fascists. You cannot make a deal with people who don't keep their word. You cannot make a deal. And you can see in the world today, the world is saying, BRICS is saying they're not making a deal with Trump. South Africa said they're not making a deal with Trump. Mexico said they're not making a deal with Trump. But now you got Macron, and I forget his name, the prime minister of England. They're coming here. Why are they coming here? They think they can talk some sense into Trump? No. They're coming here to make a deal. Because we have to remember, when you talk about NATO, when you talk about the European Union, you're talking about a collection of countries who were involved in the slave trade, or they were involved in colonialism or neo-colonialism. And it is that world that the BRICS threaten, that these other formations that are forming in a multipolar world is threatening. It's threatening them because they don't want to share. The United States does. Make America great again is what? America go back into Africa and steal some more slaves? Or America can manifest destiny its way into Latin and Central America again? I mean, what are we talking about? But they don't want to share. And they asked George Bush what would happen in the long run. He said, in the long run, we'd be dead. That was just, environment is important, but in the long run, we'll be dead. And in the meantime, let us drill, baby, drill. So you're dealing with some people who would rather the earth be destroyed than to not be in charge. And other people are saying, hey, I would like for my children and grandchildren to have a future. And so we're going to get together, and not out of ideological reasons, but a common interest. I mean, BRICS is not an ideological group. It is a group of people who found that it is better to come together when you have things in common to deal with people who you not only don't have anything in common, but don't want to even have anything in common. That's what time it is on the planet. And so for people to think that they can hide, I mean, you know, I'm a little guy, so, you know, I don't like to fight, but, you know, if I have to, you know, I will. And, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a fight. And hopefully cooler heads will prevail. But the first fight is going to be internal, not between us and anybody. The people, the proud boys are not going to stand by and see Trump them just get all of this money and not want in on it. Mm. I'm telling you.
Wow.
They're not going to stand by. And the other people who voted for Trump, they're already saying, and we didn't vote for this. We voted for you to deal with the black folks and the Mexicans. But we didn't think that my cousin would be fired from her or his jobs, or we wouldn't be able to go down to the health center, or my kids would not be able to get help and go into school and whatever. We didn't vote for that. And so the first fight, and it's already beginning, is the, but we have to, because America's never going to be the same again.
That's true.
So we can forget that. It's not going to be the same. It's isolated itself in the world. And not only that, Americans are not going to be welcome in a lot of places. And you can't tell people that you can't come here, but I'm coming here. I wouldn't go to Cancun tomorrow or next year. Right. When you go to these places, you're in a gated community anyhow. You don't dare go out among the population unless you have security. That's even true if you go to Jamaica.
Yes. Tom, we're getting close to being the end of time. I wanted to first make sure I say how much so many of us appreciate you and remember you back, of course, for what you're doing right now. But back in the 90s, your voice was so strong every day calling out that first war, Gulf War, in the early 90s. And Tom has done many things, including had a campaign to stop the death penalty in D.C. and won. The death penalty was stopped because of Tom's work together with others. But before we leave, I just wonder if you might share your final words, including what do you think about these boycott that I've heard about so much, starting this Friday, I think it is, of February 28th, where I think many, many different groups are calling on people to boycott key companies such as Walmart, et cetera, on Friday. Any thoughts about that?
Mm-hmm. I support anything that is resisting and is putting up a fight of against, let's be very clear, we're talking about fascism. You know, we're not talking about somebody who just has a wrong idea. Somebody, if you just talk to her, could take them to church and they listen to the preacher. We're talking about people who are committed to the idea of fascism, no matter what they call it or how they dress it up. So I support anything that's resisting and fighting against that. And I remember that in the 60s, one of the most potent weapons of the civil rights movement was the economic boycott. And I've been advocating the Black Christmases for 20 years, which was what turned the table in South Africa when the Blacks decided that they were not going to buy, that they were not going to buy on Christmas. That in the presence of the Cuban fighters in Southern Africa, and that was why they rushed to dust Nelson Mandela up and get him out of jail to stop the revolution. It was good for Nelson, but it wasn't good for the South African people. So the boycotts are very, very, very important and very, very effective. So I hope that I certainly will be participating, but, you know, and I would encourage everybody else. And I would also, now is the time for WPFW to step up to the plate. Now is not the time to be playing frivolous music. Now is the time to go on an anti-fascist radio, and they need to, and it can be done, and it can be done with music, It can be done with public affairs, but it can't be done unless you are committed to it. But that's, I mean, WPFW has a very, very important voice. It is the only radio station which is led by Black people of its kind in the country. But with that comes a responsibility.
Well,
and now is the time. I will say this. I will say it openly. I called up a guy last week, and he was filling in for a show, and he was acting like he was at WKYS or WHUR. And I called up and asked him if that was the best he could do.
Well,
I sure did. I'm turning on to hear one thing, and then I'm hearing something else. And you pledge it, asking people to give you money, you know, practice what you preach. And so I asked him if that was the best you could do.
Well, Tom, you know, we're on 24 hours a day, and none of us can listen 24 hours at a time. But we are doing a lot of what you're calling anti-fascist radio, the talk shows. And, of course, it depends when you listen to the music. But we want to thank you, and I'm going to ask you to introduce or say something about our outro song, Calling All Brothers. But before I do that, let me thank you again, Tom. Let me also thank Magic Mike, who's we couldn't do without Magic Mike for what he does each and every day. I want to thank the Two Heel DC team, Mari and Crystal, and of course, Chuck. And encourage everyone to, if you didn't hear about that February 28th boycott yet, that's this Friday, calling on a major boycott. And many, many different organizations are putting out that call. Boycott Walmart, boycott Amazon, boycott McDonald's. There's a whole list of organizations. And Tom, I understand that's just the first call is this February 28th, but there's going to be ongoing organized calls throughout March, April, and beyond for specific days of boycotts. So your final words, Tom, and
that's how you build a movement is to do just that. You don't stop because the first one is not what you want it to be. You keep building and building and building and building. This song, Calling All Brothers, the voice is Clyde Giles, a boyhood friend of mine, but was very active in the movement. Particularly, he had moved to Detroit and worked for Colin Young, who was the mayor of Detroit, but he was very active in the various labor struggles in Detroit. He moved to Ghana later on and contracted malaria and passed away. But he was a very revolutionary brother, one that I knew from elementary school in Cincinnati. And he put this out, not to make money, but to put it out. It's called Calling All Brothers.
Okay, we're going to play that in a second. But any comment about Askia Muhammad? I want to thank Tom also for, you know, Askia played a major role on this station, and it's partially thanks to Tom. And again, Askia left us a few years ago. Any comment about?
Well, Askia was my brother. We used to do programs together. We would just call it Kicking It. And so he was my brother, and Jamil is my godson. Jamil and Jared Ball, they are my godsons. They are the sons of Leonard Ball, another brother who I was in struggle with in Cincinnati. And he later came to D.C., and I followed him to D.C. Askia Muhammad was the man. What else could I say?
Absolutely. And again, Askia started Yardbird Suites every Tuesday, 5 a.m. till 8 a.m. And guess what? It's still on the air with Brother Jamil. You can tune in tomorrow and hear about Brother Jamil. Tom Porter, we cannot thank you enough. And we look forward to you being in touch with you again soon. Okay, let's hear it. Calling All Brothers.
No men nowhere they had to respect. Call.
brothers, calling all brothers, calling you out from the hushed kingdoms of corporate comfort, calling you out of your Mercedes and your Made in America commitment, calling you out of your cognac bottle, calling all my brothers to break out of your laid-off, unemployed mood, break out of your video hypnosis, calling all brothers, precious as you are to your women, cherished as you are by your sisters, calling you out of your days of disgust with the family who sustains you, your mothers, your sisters, your own brothers. Money, no job, no car, dead end trip.
We see your anguish and we understand.
Calling you now, nevertheless, to the defense of your own life. Calling you to defend your sons and daughters. Calling you to the defense of humanity. Brothers, I'm calling you to rise in the vacuum where our African fathers used to stand, resolute against American madness. I'm calling you to take a position against children with Uzis and no daddies. Calling you to show the children what Uzis are for.
On Thursday, February 27th, the Howard University Department of Political Science and Howard U. Kwame Ture Society present the event Revolution in These Times, a Black Liberation Book Talk, with veteran Black Panther Party member, Black Liberation Army leader, and former political prisoner Daruba Ben-Wahad, who will deliver an analysis on how today's resurgent right-wing agenda is an outgrowth of the ongoing and historical political struggle and what fight-back strategies should look like. That's Revolution in These Times, a Black Liberation Book Talk, Thursday, February 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. in the Howard University's Douglas Hall, room 221 at 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, D.C. More information and registration for this event can be found on the webpage daruba@howard.eventbrite.com. That's D-H-O-R-U-B-A at, that's A-T, howard.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades.